Okay.
I don't know.
So this thing is a little bit hard. Like it's hard to kind of come up with a single angle and approach to analyze. So we'll do the best we can. Like definitely some broader questions I want to ask. We'll probably go through the sources not inside as much because there are so many. But definitely just like on a private and more of the time, just going through the individual shitos than we would normally maybe. But in the beginning, we'll kind of take it outside. I don't want to have to read through the whole Gemara because there's so much of it. And the Shaka Vatari is really not so important for our purposes right now. So let's just kind of come at it from a bird's eye view. Right? Until now, we've been talking about Sanhedrin, judges, smicha, right, all these, the unique role of mishpat in Jewish law. And now all of a sudden the Gemara kind of like backdoors us into this whole world of Shara, right, which we haven't heard about at all until now, right? Gemara gets to it because it returns to that position we talked about back on Daf Gimel, the idea of two judges who judge, right? Shmuel's position is two judges who judge. He thought that their judgment is valid, but they're called a Bez Din Chatzif, right? You should have used three judges. It's chutzpah that you guys use two. And then the Gemara wants to figure out if we hold like this or not, right? And through that, we brought in the position of Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel, Bar Gamliel, right? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Ben Gamliel, who says that that judgment is with three and pshara is with two. So first questions. First, we have to ask, what exactly is this pshara, right? How do we define the term? Where does it come from? And then we're going to want to figure out how does it fit into the whole realm of mishpat. That's question number one. Question number two we have to ask is, like, procedurally, just what exactly do they do? And question number three, which is kind of going to be the first one we're going to talk about tonight, is it good or bad, right? That's kind of the focus of the Gemara more on Vav Amid Beis going to Zayin Amid Aleph, but we'll kind of take the sugya a little bit out of order, just because it seems to make sense to deal with that question first, right? Is pshara a positive or a negative value? So first comes first, how do you translate pshara?
Compromise?
Great, yeah, that's exactly how I would as well, right? Let's say compromise. Compromise, good or bad? That's what I would think, right? You know, in other words, I come into the sugya not knowing anything. They say we're going to avoid the whole, long drawn out legal process. We're going to have a compromise. I guess in American legal terminology, what words would you use?
Settlement.
One. Arbitration is the other. Exactly, right? And routinely, right? We almost always prefer to go to arbitration. Prefer to have a settlement than to draw out the entire lawsuit to its conclusion. Okay. But what are the actual positions in the Tanaim regarding pshara? Right? We seem to have at least three.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one is that it's bad.
Yeah.
That's Rabbi Eliezer.
Right, exactly. And not only is it Aser, right, but what does he follow that up with? Some pejoratives. Right. So that's interesting, right? Because you're putting in that last two words, right? He just says Harei Zemenayit. You're putting in what seems to be his. Seems to be what he means, right? Zemenayit says Hashem. This is. I don't know how you exactly translate Menayit. If you look at the commentaries in Tehillim, they compare it to Macharif, right? So blasphemy, right? That possibly doing pshara, it could be. It's a sin. It's a severe sin. It could be blasphemous against God. Wow. Okay, so that's position number one, right? Who else do we have on the ledger?
Rabbi Meir.
Right? Interesting. Okay, what does Rabbi Meir say?
Oh, wait, maybe not, actually. I just said that.
Yeah, kind of,
oh,
sort of.
He said the same. Oh, yeah, sorry. Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha is next.
Exactly, right? He's our second pole.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, and he says, right, mitzvah livtzoa. And what's his source?
Mishpat shalom shaftu b'sha'areichem.
Right.
I meant mishpat shalom shaftu b'sha'areichem.
Right, so how do you get shalom in your law? Right, as he says, aren't they opposites?
which is interesting in itself, right? Halo b'makom sheyesh mishpat, ein shalom. B'makom sheyesh shalom, ein mishpat, right? Those are law and peace seem like two different values. So how could the pasuk put them all together? So the solution is pshar, right? Now, does that, and this is, you know, I don't want to tip my hand. So let's kind of gloss over that for now. That's position number two. And what's position number three that we kind of got to on more of the top of Daf Zion, sort of. Nobody ever comes out and says it black on white. The Gemara just kind of realizes. Exactly, yeah. Right? Both for the Tana Kama, who showed up right after Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, and for Rabbi Shimon ben Minasya, right? So the Gemara concludes that according to both of them, Pshara is a Rishus, right? Now, how are we going to translate Rishus? Because it's always going to be tricky.
Permitted,
exactly, right? Permitted is tricky because permitted can mean permitted and encouraged. It could mean permitted, straight up, just permitted, right? No strictly value neutral. Probably going to go more value neutral because we have Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha saying it's a mitzvah. Although the more radical we make Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha, the more likely this could be to be a positive rishus, right? Like if Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha says it's just like a mild mitzvah, then rishus would probably be neutral. If Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha is going to go all in, like on the radical side that it's a mitzvah, then that will give you more leeway to have the rishus side say that it's permitted slash encouraged, right? Okay, and that's basically it, right? Those are our positions. Rabbi Yeshua ben Benassi also thought something else that was interesting, right? He had quoted that pasuk saying, once the judges know the direction the judgment is going in, they can no longer call an audible to Shara, right? They have to be committed to Din. And the logic there is understandable, right? Because if they know that Reuven does in fact owe Shimon $100, so how can they go and get them to go to arbitration where they'll split it, let's say, you know, 80-20? That's the position of Shimon Manasseh. Just by going off of the Ein Mishpat, it doesn't seem like we hold like a Shimon Manasseh. So we'll have to figure out why that is, right? His position seems to make a lot of sense. Once the judges know who's right and who's wrong, then why are they going to arbitration? They should just give them sack. Okay, so of the three positions, which one seems the most surprising?
That it's Aser?
That's what I would think. Anybody disagree? No, okay, great. Why is that the most surprising one?
Because I can't think of a compelling reason. Like, it doesn't seem, like, Gemara, first of all, doesn't really present a compelling reason for it to be Aser besides for the, like, the play on words of Botzea.
Yeah.
And also, I can't think of any reason why it should be Esther.
100%, right? It seems like it's a more exeris accusative kind of argument, right? Mm-hmm. And what was the second thing that you said?
The
argument he gives seems to be like exeris accusative, and what exactly is exeris accusative, and where is the pasuk that he's quoting coming from?
It's coming from Tehillim, and then
right. It's not coming from Parshas Mishpatim.
No.
It's coming from Tehillim. It's a play on, so that's A. B, it's a play on words, as you're saying, or, you know, an argument as to what the word Bitsua means. And three, it seems to go against common sense, right? Common sense should dictate that we are pro-arbitration, and why are we going against that? So that's kind of going to be mission. You know, the primary mission has to be you know, figuring out the Shita who has the most pressure on him going in, let's figure out what he's about, and then we can move forward.
And also, depending on how we understand Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha, how strong understand the mitzvah to be, whether you understand it's better to pshara than to do anything else first, and whether it's better to pshara melech hapila, depending on how hard of a mitzvah it is, how strong of a mitzvah it is, then that would also be surprising. But that depends on other factors.
Yeah, and let's put it this way. If we can come up with a really good justification for Rabbi Lezer ben Osher Rabbi Yossi Aglili, then that's going to reverse the pressure and put it on Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha. Right? Right now, he's kind of sitting more prettily. Once the rival position has been explained, or, you know, we come up with an angle, so then, yeah, we'll have to come back, and exactly, he might struggle to justify his own position. So the first thing that's interesting in Rabbi Yehoshua ben Osher Rabbi Yossi Aglili is the very next part of the of the Gemara, right? Because what does Rabbi Yossi, what is Rabbi Elazar's recommendation, right? He quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, and then he says, what does he prefer?
Yikov hadin etzahar.
Exactly, right? The famous phrase, right, that the law shall pierce the mountain, right? Nothing shall stand in the way of justice. And who's the ideal practitioner of Yikov hadin etzahar?
Moshe.
So, right, that's great. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yisraeli, he's got his position. He's anti-Pshara. He's pro-Din. The prime practitioner of Din is Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's great. Problem is that what is Gemara say right after that?
He talks about Aaron.
Yeah.
It's Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom.
Right. So, at least from our Gersa, I think everybody except the Ravan has this Gersa, this is all Rabbi Elazar talking, right? So if Rabbi Elazar is anti-Pshara, because he thinks that Pshara is anti Yikuv Hadin Esahar, well then what does he quote Aaron as saying? Yeah, right? Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, quotes the pasuk in Malachi, right? Malachi is talking to the corrupt second base of Mikdash Kohanim, and he's telling them, you know, back in the good old days, you know, the real Kohen, the ideal Kohen, Aaron was Torah's Emes Haisa B'fihu, right? Avla Lonim Tzabis Vasab, Shalom Umishor Halach Iti. So somehow Aaron was able to combine Torah's Emes, right, with Shalom. So if not only is Rabbi Elazar surprising in and of himself, but there seems to be an inherent contradiction, because how could he say Pshara is you know, corrupting, it's blasphemous, it's antithetical to Torah, and then turn around and say, oh, you know, the Moshe Rabbeinu model is Din, and the Aaron HaKohen model is Pshara. Well, it's great, so then he should take like a Rashus approach, right? You know, Moshe's good, Aaron's good. You have a win-win situation. Either way you go, you can't lose. So what on earth is he saying? Right? It's just it doesn't make any sense. So I didn't give it to you. The little small Tosos here kind of gives at least a minimal window into Rabbi Elazar Shita, right? So this is the small Tosos, Dir Maschel Aaron, and Tosos. This is like a what's bothering Rashi issue. So what's bothering Tosfos? What's bothering Tosos is our question. Tosos say, Perish Kevin Shalohaya Dayan, right? Aaron wasn't an official judge, right? He wasn't one of Yisro's people. He was just the Kohen. Velohaya Hadin Balafanav, Elif Ne Moshe Vadalidide Shari, right? Aaron was a regular civilian. And if you're a regular civilian, there's no question that that you can, you know, take two people who are fighting and you can, you know, work out a compromise between them. So Tosas kind of focus us a little bit more, because let's say you have two people who are you know, fighting over some monetary sum. So what Tosas makes us realize here is that everybody's going to agree that some civilian can work out a compromise, right? The only situation where you're going to say that Pshara is blasphemy is when this is not coming from the civilian, but it's coming from the Beis Din, right? Once you go to Beis Din, so now everything has to be about Din, right? The Beis Din has to stand, they have to be like the ivory tower, they have to be the purists. That's the Moshe Rabbeinu model, and once you're in there, you have to go with pure Din. We can't have the court, which is all of a sudden, you know, tempering justice with mercy. Right, I mean, so you could basically call this like the Javert argument, right? I am the law, and I can't modify myself under any circumstance, right? If I wasn't the police chief, then I could. What can I do? Right, that's my job. But that kind of helps us, because now we can kind of get into another question, which is about situations, right? Are all situations going to be the same? So Thomas is already telling us that that is not the case, right? If you are not in the court, then even Rabbi Elazar Moshe Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to agree to Pshara, right? On the other end, when we have a case where even Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is going to agree that Pshara is unacceptable, right? Namely, after the Gmar Din, right? And we're going to figure out what exactly this stage is. But everybody's going to agree that once the Psak has been given, right, the judges cannot turn around and say, Reuven, you owe Shimon $100. However, Shimon, we expect you to compromise and give up 20% of what is rightfully yours. Right? Even Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is going to agree that that is a case where this is inappropriate. But you know, so now we can come up with all sorts of middle scenarios, right? So let's say you have, like, the widow and orphan against the big bank, right? So the big banks, it's you know, minimal impact on its profit margin to cut them some slack. So, you know, in that situation, is it okay for the judge to push for a compromise? Let's say you have a case where we're just not so confident on the evidence, right? Is that going to be any different? What if you know, normally you're a pro Pshara person, but you really suspect that the defendant is a total con man, right? That that he's been dragged into your court 5 times before on fraud charges, and he's saying, you know, look, let's work out a Pshara. Right, so in that scenario, this is kind of like the opposite of the widows and orphans situation, right? Maybe here it's more appealing to say that we should go with the Yikov Hadin as Hahar approach. So, right, even within Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, and Tanakama, you know, we're going to want to figure out, like, are all situations really created equal? Maybe in some din is more appropriate, and going with a Pshara would be Botzeh Berech Nietz Hashem. And in some situations, maybe Pshara is more appropriate, right? And you can have your MS and Shalom, too, right? And that was the case of Aaron. Okay, so let's try to figure out how Rabbi Elazar ben Osher Yossi makes any sense, right? Again, not only does he think that Pshara is a problem, which is surprising, but he thinks it's blasphemous, which is kind of shocking, right? And he's all pro Yikov Hadin Esahar. So... So you know what, before we get through the first couple of sources, let's take a look at the sugya in Bava Basra, like very, very quickly. I wanted you to see this in the Gemara in Bava Basra just because it gives you kind of just general background into another question we have to deal with, which is what is the leeway of the judges, right? Do judges have the ability to go off of the range, let's say, right? You know, do things that are off the books, not officially not official din. So the Gemara and Bava Basra, do you guys know what case that they were talking about there? In Cheskas Sabbatim? There are a couple of cases.
Was this shoot of the Daini?
Yeah, this shoot of the Daini, exactly. Sorry?
The Shalvati we're talking about?
The what?
Shalvati Haya and Shalvati Haya.
Yeah, exactly, right? So two people walk into your court, and what do they both tell you?
This was my father's field.
Right. Both are saying, you know, so neither one of them has a cheska shaloshanim, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody has any, you know, concrete evidence they were ever living on the land. Each one is just saying, my father was there. And the psak, the Gemara says we do, is, I think we say yachloku, right?
No.
We learned
no,
this other night
case,
also.
In the second case, Gemara brings drops.
Oh, for this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's fine.
I forget. In that case, what happened?
In this case was Yachloku, and then in the case of, in the case with the Shtaro.
Right, exactly.
Then it's... Oh, sorry, no. In the case, with
it's
the fields.
It's called
Al Ngvar. It's called Al Ngvar.
Or,
yeah. Right, okay, great. Yeah, right. So the case, the two people say this belonged to my father, so we say called Al Ngvar, right, which is one of the most fun things to say, because what does called Al Ngvar mean?
The stronger person wins.
Exactly, right? Go have a boxing match. There's a classic, Rush, who explains what called Al Ngvar is about, and it's based on... I forget which sport ran this ad campaign, but who wants it more? Right, and the idea is that whoever the item really belongs to will fight harder to get it. That was the Rush's explanation for it, called Elung Bar.
Like the opposite of Shlomo.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
And the baby.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and who's going to quote? Not. Someone's going to quote Shlomo. Somebody I gave quotes Shlomo the baby that we had here. But maybe I'll be for Friday. But yeah, keep the Shlomo on the baby case in mind. Fine, that's right. Then what's the next case the Gemara has in there?
Do people have star from the same day and the same time?
Exactly, right. So each one, yeah, you sold me the field, and they each have perfect evidence. Mm-hmm. So there's Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, right, whether we say Yachloku or whether we say this mysterious idea of Shuda de Daini.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara gives the explanation that what's the difference between the...
the Shalavosi Haya, Shalavosi Haya versus Tushtaros.
With Shalavosi, more evidence could arise.
Exactly, right.
The Tushtaros just have the same exact...
Exactly. Ika lamekam ala demelsa, right? That there will be forthcoming evidence as opposed to these cases where there's not. So when there is no evidence forthcoming and we have to give up, so then we will go with A, Shuda de Daini, according to Shmuel. And then the question is, what is Shuda de Daini? So the Rashbam, and really it's originally Rashi and Gittin, has a big argument with Rabbeinu Tam. Right, Rashi and the Rashbam say... That's Rabbeinu Tam.
That's Rabbeinu
Tam. Right. No problem. No problem.
Oh, Rashbam said... whoever it seems like
the notes,
like the notes, yeah.
Exactly, right. So you're no longer looking in your law books, your halacha books. You're looking in your psychology books, right? So you research, right? The person who's selling the land. So you know, who do you have a better relationship with? Who's more likely to be involved in purchasing real estate, right? And you kind of use the judge can use his own common sense to figure out who to paskin like, right? That's how Rashi and the Rashbam understand Shuda de Daini, right? That they, in a world where halacha can no longer give us the answer, right? We have the evidence can no longer give us the answer. We have Tushtaros. Both are equal. So then we will fall back on judicial common sense. And Rabbeinu Tam, what does he say? This is the more fun one.
Whoever they like.
What is it?
Rabbeinu Tam said no.
Yeah,
Rabbeinu Tam says you give it to whoever you want. The
yeah.
Loka Pir Shakuntras Shiyamdu Daito Shal Nosing. Right. And
what exactly does it mean? Who is the Notin in the situation? Like if they're both claiming that it was their fathers, the father's presumably not alive.
We're talking about the
Staros.
Okay,
case.
Fine. Oh, that makes
right,
sense.
Exactly. So that just, you know, just interestingly, right, opens up Rabbeinu Tam to the question of, wait a second, right, once you're saying Shuda de Daini means whoever I like more, I can give it to, right, it's just arbitrary, I give it to whoever I want, so then, well, why not, you know, so let's say, okay, right, Reuben and Shimon, the two of you, it's totally equal, I give it to whoever I want, so we're going to have a bribery contest, right, whoever pays me the fattest check, I'll award you the field, the star,
mm-hmm.
Right? So it's an obvious question, and Tosas bring it up, and the answer they give is that once you accept a bribe, you lose your shame dayan, right? You have to be a judge in order to do a shuda de daini, and a judge who accepts bribes is no longer a judge. That's the move that Rabbeinu Tam makes. Yeah, Lior.
You didn't think this was such a compelling question, but like I could not drop it. Like, why didn't they bring up like the lashon of shohad? Like, why is that not relevant here? Like, why isn't it obvious that that could never happen because shohad is so usher? Or is this outside of the misgaret of typical dayanu? Thus, it wouldn't apply. Like, why?
What's your question exactly?
Shohad is super usher.
For sure.
So why is it even a hava mina that like you could think that maybe they would just give it to whoever. Gives them the biggest sum of money or whatever. Why would we even think that would be a possibility? Why do we say, like, no, anyone who takes something, because they don't even use the Lashon Shohad still. They say anyone who takes an agra, anyone who takes a reward, thus can't be a dayan. But obviously, because we have Shohad, like, why don't they even bring that up? I really am still bothered by it. I'm not going to ask your question.
It sounds like more like Peshara than it does then.
So the answer would probably, be because it's outside of Misgaret and normal Deen and it's just Peshara that isn't an op problem?
So maybe. I wouldn't want to say that because I'm going to want to try to keep Peshara inside the Misgaret of Deen. And the problem with you saying that is that, well, once we're saying we are out of the world of Deen, what's Tosas's answer? The answer is, well, he's no longer judges.
So then why
is
he going to be
dying in order
to exactly.
He wouldn't be a judge in the first place. So the Havmir would be, look, Shochad is usher when you're corrupting justice, right? It's supposed to go to you, but I'm giving it to you because
okay.
You gave me money.
So Shochad just doesn't apply here because it's not a typical...
Who cares? It's a coin flip,
okay.
Right? So you give... Right? There's no corruption of justice going on. It's totally arbitrary mm-hmm. in the first place. Right? Probably is what you think. But anyway... What's the podcast? That's great.
And then Tosfos have this little piece at the end where they say that only a master judge, only a mumcha, again, our favorite word, mumcha, right? Here, mumcha clearly is not someone who has smicha, right? Here, the mumcha is definitely just an expert judge. That only a dayan mumcha can do shuda de dayani, which makes a lot of sense, right? Because it's a little bit counterintuitive, because this is the area of judgment which has nothing to do with Shulchan Aruch, right? And dafka there, you need the biggest master of the Shulchan Aruch, right, to figure out what he's going to do when he's working off his own common sense, because probably you just need to have the most traditional experience. But anyway, right, so we have this precedent, and this is the Kuliyama, right, even Rebbe Zev Noach, Rebbe Sigli is not going to disagree with this, we have a precedent for some sort of common sense within the framework of Din. If you assume like Rabbeinu Tam, maybe not, right? And this is just like an up for grabs. But according to Rashi and the Rashbam, which seems to be more the consensus view, then you have a precedent. And then we're going to want to figure out, like, is there a relationship between Shuda the Daini and our Pshar? Okay, so now let's get into our question of what on earth is Benosh Rabbi Yosef Glili thinking when he says that Pshara, that Bitsua, is like somebody who is Menahitz. Yeah, okay, so I gave you the Rambam on Arkaos, right? So what does the Rambam say about going to non-Jewish courts? Last Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, yeah. So he's
it's like classic Rambam is dramatic.
Yeah, you go to non-Jewish courts and it is like you...
Rebelling against
Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Russia, and as if you blasphemed and rebelled again, raised your hand against the Torah of Moshe. Shneamar, right? Be'elam shvatim asher tasim lefnehem, lefnei akum. Below lefnei adyotim. So exactly, right? Which we dealt with in the first semester. And right now I'm writing a whole article about. Yeah.
Cool. For what?
For YA publication / to apply to the Kollel in YA.
Oh, cool.
So, when it's done, I'll send it to you.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, so let's see. Anyway, so the Rambam says here, right, if you go to non-Jewish courts, it is equivalent to blasphemy. And the question is, like, well, why? Right? Why is going to non-Jewish courts the equivalent of blasphemy? So, the answer is, should be more, like, common sense. Like, why would you think?
Well, judges are referred to as Elohim.
Excellent.
And so, if you go to a non-Jewish judge, it's like you're worshiping a false
God. Awesome, right, exactly. I think that actually works with the context of the Rambam, because every asks, nobody counts as one of the 613 to go to non-Jewish court. So why isn't that its own mitzvah? So everybody tries to figure out what mitzvah it should be subsumed under. So I think for the Rambam, it's subsumed under the prohibition to curse judges.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what this whole parak is all about, and Ty, that's going exactly with what you're saying, right? That you're spitting in the face of the Elohim by going to the non-Jewish court, and spitting in the face of the Elohim by extension means who you're also spitting in the face of, the Elohim, right? With a capital Aleph. So then the idea is that you're supposed to be using the Torah as your judicial system. And instead of using the Torah as your judicial system, right? Instead of using the Elohim, the judges, right? The Joshua Haran, the Shefa Eloki, everything we talked about. Instead, you're walking off and you're using the non-Jewish courts instead. So this became like a big fight in the 1940s when they were setting up the State of Israel. And you had Professor, I think his first name was Menachem, I don't know. I think definitely Professor Ilon, Datilumi jurist, right, who's very involved in setting up the Mishpat Ivri school, right, where they're trying to set up this legal system for the State of Israel. And he wrote like an article explaining why he thinks that there's no problem of Arkaos by using this system. The main argument he makes is that the problem going to non-Jewish courts is really a national problem, right? That in, like the Gemara says, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, anybody who leaves the Dayane Yisrael to go to the Igorios Shel Goyim, right? To go to the assemblies of non-Jews. So that violates Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Goyim. So he argued, look, so the real problem is going to a going to the non-Jews instead of going to the Jews. But Baruch Hashem, right, we have, we're reviving the state, we have Jewish courts, Jewish judges. So the fact that the judges are, not at all using Jewish law, or minimally using Jewish law, shouldn't be a problem. You should still, it should still be acceptable under the laws of our kaos. So everybody got upset, on like the whole range, the Halachic range, right? So you've got like the Chazon Ish is attacking him, Ritzi Pesach Frank, the Tzitz Eliezer, and Rav Herzog, right? The Rav Herzog is a Rav Rashi, so he also attacks us very sharply, right? And the point that they're all making is that Arkos is not a nationalistic issue. Arkos, right, again, Arkos meaning non-Jewish courts, is all about throwing away the Torah system for something else. So the piece that I have here from the Tzitz Eliezer is quoting, he says, I got this great letter from Ritzi Pesach Frank in my desk. He doesn't tell us how he got his hands on the letter. It's not, to the best of my knowledge, I could be wrong, but I don't think that it was published by Ritzi Pesach Frank. But he attacks him. And that, a timeout, 1 second, I'm a little confused. Yeah, that's not what I put on the source sheet here. Okay, yeah. So never mind. So then, Ritzi Pesach Frank attacks him also. But what I have here, right, I have here is from the Chazon Ish, right? This is relevant for our purposes. The Chazon Ish talks about, right, there are cases in Sanhedrin where we say that you have non-trained judges who are judging, right? You have the case on Chaf Gimel of Arkos Shebis Surya. These are the courts of Amoratsim who are working in outside of Israel. We'll have, I don't know if we'll get to it, but you have the Gemara of, right, Naaman alai shlosha roe bakar, right, you can get me 3 cattle herders, and they will serve as judges for me. So why are those okay? So the Chazon Ish gives, like, a really compelling distinction, right, and he says that in all these cases where the Gemara approved of not unqualified judges, so the whole point was that they were not working within any official legal system, right? All the Rishonim say this, except for the Meiri, who gives people problems, because everybody says that the Arkos Shebis Surya worked with their Nimusim, right? Nimusim, their own common sense. Meiri has Nimusim v'chukim, so everybody thinks that like chukim means, oh, they're also using like a formal system. It seems more likely that he just means like, you're using some established precedents, some common sense, some, common practices, that Amiri also doesn't seem to mean this formally at all. But so the Chazon Ish writes, so let's look at on the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line, right? So just read 2 lines here. Where he says, Amnam, right? There's Tzitz Eliezer, Yod Beis, Pei Beis. First word in line is Arkos. And he says, Amnam, Afagav Delika Beinehem Dayan Sheyadin Alpi Mishpitei HaTorah. Right? In the neighborhood, unfortunately, they have no qualified judges. In Syria, it's a total disaster. Therefore, Muchracham Lihmanos Baal Seichel Lefi Musrei HaAdam. They're forced to appoint somebody, Baal Seichel, someone who has common sense, who's going with human ethics and moralities. Einam rasha'im lekabel aleihem chukei amim o lechokek chukim. Right, so they are not allowed to use to accept the laws of the non-Jews or to establish their own official laws. Shehashofet kol din shelofanav haner e'elav. Right, what are they supposed to do? You judge each case as it comes before you. Right. You hear the two parties out, you investigate, and use your common sense to try to figure out who's winning, who's right, who's wrong, who's telling the truth, and who's not. And he says, Zehu bechlal pshara, right? This is what pshara is all about, right? You're not in an official system. But to go in an official system, right, where you're going to use the Mishpat Ivri, I'm going to look up Professor Ilon's legal textbooks. So even though he's an Orthodox Jew, the fact that his legal system is not based on the Torah and it's being used as an official source of judgment, so even though it's not coming from the Goyim A, it's not coming from some idolatrous group B, nonetheless, you are still violating the whole concept of Lifnehem velo Lifnei. Lifnei Goyim, right? That's kind of what the almost universal psak was, right? Everybody loves quoting this Chazon Ish. I just saw there's an article by Rav Yaakov Ariel in Tchumen, who's like the main Dati Lumi posek out there, and he says the same thing. This is like 5 years ago. So people are still quoting this Chazon Ish. But now I think we can kind of understand what Rabbi Lezer Benosh Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, because all he does is take this reasoning one step forward, right? What did the Chazon Ish say? He said, going to non-Jewish courts of law, bad, right? Unacceptable, because you're ignoring the Torah as your source of law. When you have no choice, therefore you're doing this informal, Baal Seichal, Musrei HaAdam, Nimusim, that's going to be acceptable. And that's like Pshara. So what's really Ezra Ben Osher B'Yossi Levi going to say?
Pshara is not really din. It's this informal system, so you can't circumvent din by just doing this.
Right.
You don't have to.
Right. He's going to say, well, just like I think you can't walk away from Toras Moshe to go to the Goyim, and just like you can't walk away from Toras Moshe to go to Professor Ilon's Mishpat Ivri, so too you can't walk away from Toras Moshe to do Pshara. Right? What do you mean? I have Choshemish, but I have Halachos, I have Torah. It's given from Har Sinai. And why am I ditching all this to go with my own common sense Pshara? If I can look up Choshemish, but Simin, Chav Gimel, Sif Aleph, and instead I say, I'm going to ignore the Shulchan Aruch, I'm just going to go with a compromise, then isn't that the same thing as, what the Rambam is talking about?
Is he saying that this is like Pshara, or that this is Pshara? This is included.
The Chazon Ish, I don't think you can tell, because it's not what he's really focusing on.
So then, then we have the same question that with Adam's answer to my question,
right,
about the Tosfos. Then, because this is clearly outside of the Misgaret of Ainu completely in this case, because it's just about appointing Baal Seichel, and that is something completely different, which is why it's not even, which is why we're saying that. Rabbi Elazar ben Yossi Aglili would be so opposed to it, but then we have the Tosfos, which says that the reason that they can't accept anything is because the second they do that, they lose their status as a Dayan. So it's clearly being a Dayan is still important. This is still a part of it. So then, how does that all jive?
Well, that was Shuda Dizania, not Pshara.
Ah, okay, so that's
right. In other words, Rabbi Elazar will say exactly. He's going to tell you, Shuda Dizania keeps me up at night. I can't believe we have to have this halacha of Shuda D'Daini. It's crazy. It goes against everything. Yeah, it's in a very specific case where the Shulchan Aruch fails you.
Okay.
Right? I have the two shtaros. They're equal. I can't get anything from the evidence. Right? Leika l'meikam al demilsa. Nothing is coming to me from the evidence. Therefore, I have to use my own seicha.
So is that a subset of Pshara or something different entirely in what we're saying? Or is Pshara...
I am going to want to say that it's related to Pshara. That it's related.
Related, okay.
Yeah. We'll have to see.
Okay.
So then just moving forward, just a couple of other sources, right? So the second source that Tzitzel Eliezer have is from the Sefer Ikar, right, of Yosef Albo. And all he does really is he the ideas here are actually all from our good old Drasha Saran, right? Our distinction between the Tikkun Medini, right, Mishpat HaMelech, versus the Sanhedrin, right, the Tzedek, the Shefa Eloki, right? That regular secular law is very nice at establishing peace and justice in society. The whole point, he argues, of Torah law specifically is that we're trying to get you more, right? And the whole point is that this is exactly what you're missing out on by going with the Pshara as opposed to going with the Mishpat, right? The one nice thing he has, it's not a perfect analogy, but it gets his point across, right? As he says the difference between the Tikkun Medini secular law and the Shefa Eloki, which he also says Ish Nimusi, right? The person of common sense and manners, exactly. So the difference between that and the Torah law, it's like two ways of looking at a mouth, right? He says you can look at a mouth as being used for eating food, right, which is its simple technical purpose, and at that it's very good and efficient, and that's what the Ish HaNimusi, Kibbutz Medini, is all about. But what the Torah is all about is giving you that added dimension, right? What's the second thing the mouth can do is the mouth can be used not just to ingest food, but it can be used to produce, prayer and shavach to Hashem.
Is it weird that I never thought of the mouth in that way, as like also being able to intake things and also like breathe, whatever. And also
pull the audience, I don't know.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I just don't know what you're saying.
Keep going.
Alright. Maybe you had a stomach virus with
right, I guess. I never.
So then the kind of two more sources on the anti pshara list. One, were you guys able to see the Meshech Chachma?
No, from was that Vayera? On the sheet?
I forgot to put it on the quote sheet, but I must have,
no,
I totally put it on
the
source sheet.
Oh, was it after the Gemara, though? It was.
Okay, so see the Meshech Chachma when you have a chance, because the Meshech Chachma was awesome. And it's on a great pasuk. The pasuk it's on, if you can get it open, if anybody who has a computer or whatever, is Vayera, so it's Parak Yud Ches, pasuk Yud Tes, I think, in Bereishis. When Hashem is saying, how can I not tell Avraham about Sodom?
Mm-hmm.
So what does he say? It's a brilliant
Mashiach.
Sorry,
which pasuk is it on?
I think. So Hashem says, right, Kiyadativ, Laman Asher Yitzaveh Espanav Espanei Beisav Acharav, right, I know Avraham, he will command his sons and his household, Vishamru Derech Hashem, right, they will follow the way of God, Lasos Tzedakah U'Mishpat, right, they will perform Tzedakah and they will perform Mishpat. So, the Meshech Chachma jumps in and he says, well, if you look at our Gemara, right, the source for doing pshara, right? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karach thought there's a mitzvah to do pshara. So he quoted, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karach quotes from David HaMelech, right? The pasuk says about David, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, Vayhi David oseh, Mishpat utztaka l'chol amo. Right? So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karach says that just like David combined Mishpat and Staka, how do you combine Mishpat and Staka?
Pshara,
exactly, right? So too, that's what Avraham was doing as well, right? Avraham was also doing tzedaka u'mishpat. Question is that for David, the pasuk says that he would do mishpat u'tzedaka, and for David, the pasuk says he did tzedaka u'mishpat. So the Meshech Chachma asks, why do we have the order flipped? And he says the answer is really very simple, right? When the pasuk is talking about the pshara of Avraham, it's talking about mishpat and tzedaka in a non-Jewish system. And when the pasuk is talking about David, it's talking about mishpat and staka in a Jewish system, right? So when you're in the non-Jewish system, which ultimately is largely based off of the ethics and morals, right, tikkun medini, the nimusim, etc., there, right, as again, the same idea from the justice around, the primary value is peace and justice in society. So there he says your primary value is going to be pshara. That's going to be option one. And that's why for Avraham and his non-Jewish household, right, Eliezer and his buddies, the order goes tztaka u'mishpat, right? Tztaka comes first, and only afterwards comes mishpat. Whereas, the Meshech Chachma argues, for David, right, who's within a Jewish system, we're going to have the order flipped around exactly the other way, right? Mishpat's going to come first, and then is going to come tztaka, because primarily, ideally, you would like to go with the Torah system. If the Torah system is going to fail you, then you're going to go with the Pshara system. That's what the Meshech Chachma has to say in Parshas Vayera. I think the Yad Ramah, although I could be wrong, wants to say, based off of that pasuk in Vayera, that non-Jews have a mitzvah of tzedakah. And it wouldn't be counted in the Sheva Mitzvot Pnei Noach, because we only count the Sheval Tasa mitzvos. We don't count the proactive mitzvos. I'm not sure of anybody else who says that, but that's just like a fun fact based off of that pasuk. Okay, the last sources to draw on to defend our now good friend Rav Elazar ben Osher Yosef Aglili is some of the stuff in the Yerushalmi. But we're getting ahead a little bit here. How many of you guys are able to see the Yerushalmi so far? Just Jennifer. Okay, no problem, because there's not so much. There are really only 2 points in here that I wanted to draw out. Just both of them seem to be helping Rabbi Eliezer ben Osher Yossi Aglili. So one is the very simple following question, right? If we like, let's go back to Javert, right? He happens to work in this situation. A few years ago, one of my best friends is obsessed with Les Mis and found out I hadn't listened to the soundtrack, so he was very upset. And then I was with some friends driving to Ofruf in Cleveland.
Oh.
So I promised him that
you can listen to the whole.
In the 16 hours we were driving, I'd find 2 hours to get through the soundtrack. Funny. So I now know what happens in the story. Yeah, it was.
No, oh, it's great.
It was great. Oh, it was right. You didn't like it?
Yeah.
Never seen. There's, I like the second two. One. I like the first one.
There are two.
Yeah, the same effect.
You saw it in Hebrew?
Yeah, there's one with me and Nisan.
Oh, you mean the musical one versus the non-musical one?
The non-musical one is so non-musical. Good. I don't like the musical.
When they had the fake that day last year, they shut down the city for the snow, and then the snow didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So my wife and her friend got student rush tickets for like nothing.
Whoa.
And they sat in like the second row for the musical. But anyway, right? So we brought up Javert because, right? The I am the law character, right? The situations where you obviously should, where the law is obviously standing as a steer at the shalom, right? You know, shalom is definitely a high value. Like, you know, Shimon Karcha's got a point. We do like compromise and peace, etc. Right? If you're facing the widows and orphans, then it's, you know, the idea that we should temper justice with mercy sounds compelling. So could you have, you'd want to see some sources telling you that, you know, through mishpat you also could have shalom, or you could also have tzedakah. So that's what the Yerushalmi gives us, because so it's very short. It's only a couple lines. It's the first one in the line was shalom. It's after Yehoshua ben Karcha. The first one in the line is shalom. Then you got a period, and then the Gemara says, Dan es Adin. Right, let me know if you guys have it. Okay, Adi, you want to take it?
Dan es Adin, Zich v'zakai, Chayim v'chayav, Amalei alav hakatuv, Kilu asei sedkai im hazikui, V'kilu asei sedkai im hachayav.
Yeah, so what just happened?
So, I'm not sure about the kasuv part, but
Dun es Adin, right? So step one.
Did
I do a pshara?
You did not use it. Did not do pshara. Certainly not.
I gave a psak, right?
Yeah. So the guy who's zocha, the guy's chayev.
Right.
And then I kind of release the puzzle.
So it's as if you do tzedaka with the acquitted party, and it's as if you did tzedaka with the convicted party. How did I do tzedakah with the convicted party, right? I said, you got to pay him $1 million. So how is that tzedakah?
Wow.
So tzedakah mazikoi, wonderful, right? Shehichzer lo mamono, right? So that's great, right? You return the money that he was going to lose out. V'machayav, shehotzi gzeilo mitachas yado. Right?
Yeah.
Stole $1 million. Now, thanks to me, you're not going to be responsible for having stolen $1 million. Had I done a pshara and I said, okay, so, you know, just, you know, Jennifer, go pay $750, right? Pay $750,000 and that'll work out the compromise. Well, what do you mean? At the end of the day, this is how you stole $250,000. So the real way, ultimately, for me to do true tzedakah is through mishpat, right? Is to fully, perform the justice and do what's supposed to be done. that the Gemara doesn't say explicitly, but imagine that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Elsher, Rabbi Yossi Iglili is going to tell you. Just the very last point, the other line in the Yerushalmi, which is which you don't really have in the Bavli, is this very last line on the bottom of the Yerushalmi. Amar Rabbi Matanya. Cool. Or Matan, I'm not sure how exactly he pronounced his name, but Masnaya, yeah, I'm not sure. I only found out recently that Sidkiyahu's original name was Matanya.
I never realized that either.
When Nebuchadnezzar puts him in, he changes his name.
Huh.
So what does he say? He says, Af ha-pshara tzricha hechreya hadas. So this is just a nice segue to get us to the rival perspective, which is going to be, right, notice now that we've done so much to save the anti-pshara pshat, so how are we going to save pshara? So this could sort of start to get us there, right? Af ha-pshara tzricha hechreya hadas. Question is, how do you translate that? So, how would you translate that?
Like, direct translate, or, like, what it means? What it's trying to...
Direct translate. Literally. Simple explanation.
Even pshara requires, forcing the mind?
I said, like, a decision.
Well, that makes more sense.
Like, as in, what I think would be saying is that pshara doesn't mean that you leave it up to the litigants to just go back and forth. The litigants are the validi, right? There's validi and
everything,
so anything, body, it's not that you would just, like, let them do whatever they want, and then you would oversee that settlement process, which would, I guess, almost be more like Hodali and Gavar, but it would be you decide what the settlement should be, and then you enforce that. So there should be some akra in that.
That works. I'm not sure. There are a few ways you could go with it. You could play up Hachra, and you could say you just have to give, like, a very firm psak, right? You have to step in, you have, like, the two, you know, you got two siblings who are fighting, and you step in very firmly, and you say, you know, I don't care who's right, who's wrong, who started, who didn't. Here's what we're going to do, right? You're going to go into your corner, and you're going to go into your corner. So that's one possibility, which works for us, because then we're going to say that Pshara is still about avoiding Kold Alam Gvar, right? Kold Alam Gvar is a code word for anarchy, right? What's the opposite? Let's put it this way. What's the opposite of Mishpat?
Anti-Mishpat.
Exactly.
It's presented as Tzaka, but it's not.
Well, it's not presented as opposite. There's presented as not often working together.
The real opposite of Mishpat is anarchy.
Right.
Right? Pshara could be antithetical, but the ultimate opposite of Mishpat is anarchy. And so if you're coming up with a mechanism which is all about avoiding Kol Dalam Gvar, which kind of gives a shout-out back to Shuta Dedaini, so maybe this is dafka, something which is within the judicial system. I'm giving a psak. Is it the true, ultimate, you know, Yikuv HaDin HaSahar psak? Maybe not, but it's a psak. It is a Hachreya Hadas. Interpretation A, I think that's great. The other thing you could say is the Hachreya Hadas, you kind of focus on the Das part, and you mean that you don't arbitrarily, like, kind of think back to that Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam, right? You're not doing Rabbeinu Tam arbitrarily picking a party. That's not pshara. Maybe that's Shuta Daini, maybe not. But pshara is about you take into account what the various parties are saying, and you're using common sense to try to figure out who's right and who's wrong. So you can call this a sort of like shadow mishpat, right? You know, mishpat's all about trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong, and pshara is about trying to figure out, you know, sort of who's right and who's wrong. I don't throw out the facts just because we're in a pshara. Right, maybe it'll be justice tempered with mercy, like, come on, it's the widows and orphans, and you're the big bank, like, you know, cut them some slack, but we're not going to throw the facts out entirely. You still need some hechrei ha-das. Okay, great, any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
So moving forward, I guess we'll just go ahead with Mar Makomos. The Yad Ramaz I had here, I get to see just because he kind of gets into, like, the nitty gritty of how to translate Betza. Let's go forward. We'll pass through these. We'll help out Yehoshua ben Karcha.
The sun goes down before I came down and grabbed the train. I was looking at the parak and to tell him this parak yud that Rabbi Elazar is working off of, the Bosea Beirich parak. And take a look at the parak. Let me know what you think. Because particularly, look at Pasuk Hey. Look at Pasuk Hey and see if you think that works into Rabbi Elazar's Shita.
Yeah.
The parak and tell him, you just skim over the parak and look at Pasuk Hey. It's just an idea I just had. It could be I'm totally wrong.
Yeah.